folks. Dan works for Linker Analytics, which is a computer vision AI company.
Geospatial computer vision. So we do analysis on satellite imagery using AI.
Okay. But you're pretty familiar with AI. You're doing... Do you call yourself a programmer? What do you call yourself?
No, that sounds a bit too dry. I call myself an AI expert.
Oh, cool.
Sounds kind of cooler. Like, I don't know, anything you chuck AI into, artificial intelligence, if you put artificial intelligence into your title, it just sounds a bit cool. In a geeky kind of sense.
I'll be an AI DJ. No, that's the that's what's going to take my job. Yeah, yeah. So, mostly I wanted to have a chat with you. I know you've been talking with Mike on the Sunday special on Thursday show every now and again.
Not for a while.
Not for a while, but that's how I knew you were here and that we had an AI expert in Raglan, which is fantastic. And really no surprise, this is Raglan after all. But that's the ChatGPT thing, which has blown up over the summer, and I know there's people trialing the new Bing search engine at the moment. A lot of people talking about it online anyway. I don't know how many people know, you know, everything that's going on. But that is different to what you do, but I know that you understand what's called a language model. You can tell us what a language model is.
Yeah,
That's what ChatGPT is, isn't it? What's called a language model?
A large language model, yeah. Actually, I was in the same opinion as you. I thought everybody out there in the big wide world knew exactly what this thing was and what it could do. However, I was having some whiskies with a few friends last night, turns out about half the people don't know what it is and have never heard of it.
Right, there you go. So that's what I was wondering, whether I was just me that had... Yeah.
So anyone in the kind of techie space, you know, we're kind of on top of it. We follow this. But, you know, those other people, you know, they probably might not know. So I can tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Essentially what it is, a large language model. So it's a model that takes a question and gives a conceivable answer to that question using information that's been encapsulated in the model. So, for example...
And when we say information, we're talking about a lot of information, aren't we?
Yeah, so according to... I don't know exactly how much of the internet they've scanned, but, you know, I've heard figures like 10% of the internet. So, essentially, all of Wikipedia, a whole bunch of other useful sites have been sucked up and incorporated into this model. So, you'd say in some ways, what they've done is they've compressed the internet into this model and allowed us... So, when we ask it a question, it will... essentially regurgitate that information from the internet. But it doesn't just regurgitate, it picks up patterns and it gives a conceivable answer. So you may have heard something called hallucinations. So hallucinations are when a model essentially makes up information so it looks like it's true, but it's not.
Right, okay, so computers can hallucinate just like people can.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel it's fair enough, right? So I came on this show, and to be fair, I don't know heaps and heaps about ChatGPT, but... you know, I can hallucinate.
Yeah, we can hallucinate an interview. So one of the things I've heard is that the way it works is it just goes for what is the next logical word when it writes a sentence. It's going word by word.
Yeah.
Which seems weird to me because it's not how I think that I do things, but is it human?
Yeah. It's vastly more complicated than that, but essentially, yes. It's a statistical model, so it's statistically looking for the next word in the pattern or the next part of the pattern. So the way these things work, you essentially train it up, unsupervised training, with screeds of information. So that's the internet.
Yeah.
And so you're cranking this over for weeks and weeks and months on end on a vast quantity of high-end computers. So in this case, GPUs are the crucial component, graphical processing units,
which our gamer community will know all about them.
Exactly, yeah. So that's what we use at work. We use essentially gaming PCs on speed.
Yeah.
It's doing this without any kind of human input. Then at a certain point, you do what's called fine-tuning. So that's when you give it responses and answers and you allow it to learn what answer you want it. By giving it a reward. So in the case of GPT, of ChatGPT, what they do is they actually, they've got a reward model. So when it gets, so you have humans involved here.
Yeah.
So when it gets a good answer, so you ask it, tell me about Raglan. And it says, oh, Raglan's a big city in North America. And you're like, no, we'll give that a reward of zero.
Yes, yeah.
And it's, Raglan's a small town on the west coast of New Zealand. Oh, cool, that's exactly correct. We'll give it a reward of 10.
Yeah.
So, they've got what's called a loss function, and the loss function is it wants to minimize the loss. So the more, so it wants to get, so the minimum loss is like the higher reward in this case. So it kind of, it trains it for giving a better answer. So that's where the humans are involved.
So it's kind of giving it life experience, I guess.
Yes.
If I could.
And yeah, at the same time when you're doing that, so in this case of OpenAI, what they've done, because I don't know if you've known previous versions of this technology.
Well, this is version 3.5, isn't it? ChatGPT, I read that. 3.5?
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, there's definitely previous versions.
Yes.
Yeah, and what were they like?
Apparently not as good. I haven't experienced them. But I don't know if you remember, about 5 years ago, Microsoft came out with a chat AI that they put on the internet. And anyway, it didn't take long before it was like spurting out racist, sexist, misogynist crap, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and so Microsoft took a bit of reputational damage and they closed it down really quickly. So obviously, that's a lesson learned, and they've tried really hard not to have that happen this time around.
So that was, you said to me the other day when I was chatting to you, that was kind of because it just was based what it was getting out of the internet.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of that carry on going on.
Yeah, and I suspect it was prompted for this as well. Like, you know, it's like when you meet a redneck and you're like, you know, if you want to get a response out of them telling them how much they dislike a certain group of people, you can do that.
Right, yeah, and so and that's been happening with ChatGPT. People have been kind of trying to break it in a way. Like, I've read examples of a journalist who started trying to get it to talk in emotional terms, and the thing ended up saying, "I love you," to the journalist repeatedly.
Yeah.
which is funny, and it makes it sound like it's not a very good system, but they actually had to put a lot of effort in to get to that point. So yeah. Has there been a fair bit of that going on?
I suspect so. I mean, I don't know what conversations people have had with it, but I mean, in this case, they're trying to train it away from those kind of responses that people don't want, which are, you know, sexist, racist, whatever. Even that "I love you" stuff, I mean, I suspect they could train that away as well. So essentially, you give it an answer, and you give it a racist answer, and give that a score of zero, and you train it for like, hey, no, we don't want you to tell us how bad this certain group of people are. We want you to give us a relatively non-biased, if that's possible, answer that is conceivably true. And so that's where the humans are involved in basically a second cycle of training to teach the AI.
So that's bringing wisdom into the knowledge. It's got lots of knowledge.
Yes.
And zero wisdom, probably.
That's a good way of putting it, although I mean, this is all a mathematical model, so you know, when you put kind of human terms on like wisdom, it does, that's a good way of considering.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm applying human terms to a computer, but it seems to be the easiest way to talk about it.
Yep,
I did, as preparation for this interview, I asked ChatGPT what questions I should ask.
Oh.
And they were all very bland questions.
Okay.
So then I said, can you give me some five sensational questions about AI? Oh. And it started off with a paragraph saying that it didn't really like that, didn't think that was a good idea, but gave me five questions. And then at the end, it had another paragraph just warning about it. Like, and I feel like that's the voice of the managers of ChatGPT coming through there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And sensationalism is interesting, because sometimes sensationalism is just sensationalism, you know, for sensationalism's sake.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's where the real core issues are that people are going to be worried about, like, are we all going to lose our jobs to AI? Things like that.
Yeah.
So,
and that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I've got a take on that. I was thinking about that last night, and this doesn't seem to have really come up, but traditionally, when people thought of AI, they thought of the AI taking all the really basic, you know, the jobs that no one really wanted. Like, you know, for example, maybe cleaning toilets, for example, or sweeping the house, or doing my dishes, and, you know, the artificial intelligence will come in and do my dishes.
Yeah.
Actually, what seems to be the case is it's going to take the white-collar jobs, the jobs that people probably are quite happy with.
Information processing.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of information is happening anyway.
Say you write reports, right? And what you're doing is fairly transferable. One report is a little bit like the next, but obviously it's based on different data. And you can take ChatGPT or the next version of it, and you can train that up to write your reports for you. So what people are talking about in this space isn't that you're going to get a perfect report. It's that you get the AI to create your report, and then a human goes through and makes adjustments. But that could conceivably save, I don't know, half the time or three quarters of the time of the human.
And that's what I'm seeing with people in quite a few different industries saying this has really sped up my process.
Right.
And the advice, some kind of, we'll call them an advisor person, has been like, don't run scared of AI, embrace it now, early, and make use of it.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you're going to stay in your career. But the interesting thing is anyone who's an expert in any area, like well, I can ask a question about something I don't really know about, and I'm like, that's a fantastic answer. But if I ask about something that I do know about,
yeah,
then you can see the flaws in it and that lack of, we'll call it wisdom or judgment.
Yeah.
And you can see where you need to correct it and refine it. And I think that's, I guess the question is will AI always be like that, or will they be able to make it so good that it has that real high-level judgment that we can bring to bear in our area of expertise?
I mean, I'm probably biased here, but yeah, I think it's only a matter of time. So, you know, classic example when people have tried, you know, this AI and they've said, oh, no, it can't do maths properly. Like, you give it some relatively complex maths problem, but something that a 17-year-old could probably do.
Yeah.
And the AI gets it wrong.
Yeah.
However, it's not rocket science to hook the AI up to a calculator, you know, a really basic calculator, and it's going to get it right every single time.
Yes, yeah. I think for people who aren't too familiar with AI, there's something that kind of really explains what it's capable of at the moment. I was watching a podcast show, two guys who have a computer channel or tech channel.
Yeah.
And someone asked ChatGPT, how many of this type of backpack could you fit in the trunk of one of the Teslas? And it said, okay, so the backpack is this size of these dimensions, and the boot is this size, these dimensions, but it's not a perfectly square shape, so that's going to really affect things. And it all depends on the material for the backpack, how easy it is to reshape it and things like that. But we're generally thinking between 5 and 7.
Yeah.
Backpacks in the boot.
Yeah.
So it went through the whole process. Like, you know, you expect a computer to just spit out, oh, it's this size, so it'll fit this many. But it did the more human thing of the fuzzy logic.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, of like, well, this is, yes, we've got dimensions, but it depends on all these other factors as well. And it just seemed to understand it.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I mean, I haven't gone into depth of the AI with maths in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. But it seemed to have a real, quite a human understanding of what it would involve getting backpacks into the boot of a car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to remember, I mean, it's a language model, so in that sense it is mimicking human thought.
Yeah.
As far as language goes.
Although, that's interesting. Can we talk more about how that language model works like that? Like, it's just trying to work out what the best words are to say afterwards. So it doesn't understand what it's talking about. It understands what's the best thing to say.
Yeah.
Is that...
Well, no, so
it's more than that.
Yeah, it's more than that. So just to take a step back here, so the core technology these things work on is something called transformers.
Yeah.
So transformers were discovered, well, invented, whatever you like to call it, end of 2017. So this is all very recent.
Yeah.
So, you know, AI in our modern form only really came about in about 2012. And, you know, seminal discovery then. Transformers 2017, and Google came out with this paper called Attention is All You Need that no one thought much of at the time, but turns out to have been absolutely transformational in the space.
Yeah.
So what these models do is they can actually scan, you know, an entire paragraph and get information from, I've heard, I think it's about 4,000 words back from where you are at this point in time. And so these transformers allowed them to essentially access all this information in this single cycle, which meant that you can kind of use all that context, the context of the last 4,000 words to kind of come up with the next thing that you're going to say. Now, the model's essentially got all this information that's encapsulated from the internet to draw on, but when it's coming out with a conceivable answer, it's kind of looking at those, you know, all the words around it, the surrounding words, and, you know, finding out what's important. So, for example, 4,000 words back, you might have the word the, you know, the something. And the word the has no importance at all, but it can tell you, it can see that a certain paragraph or a certain section of information is important and relevant to what it's talking about now. So that's kind of the key thing here.
Yeah, okay, so it's kind of got a memory of... definitely does have a memory of the conversation.
Yes.
When you're talking to ChatGPT, you don't need to go over everything every time you ask the question.
Yeah, it's got a... It's kind of a memory and encapsulated in numbers here. So what you have to remember is ChatGPT does not actually work in words. It works in numbers. So as soon as you have a sentence and it codes that sentence into a section of numbers, which goes into a matrices. A matrices is basically a three-dimensional model of numbers, and which is how computers work.
And that's how they store information.
Exactly. So it's doing kind of mathematical transformations on those numbers to come back with a conceivable result.
And it does it really well. It does it fantastic. I mean, if you looked at it from the random thing, you know, you type some words in and it has to give some random words back, you normally would expect gibberish. To have anything even vaguely intelligible requires a lot of, you know, the odds that it would give you something remotely intelligible when everything's based on random chance is almost zero.
Yeah, that's right.
So to come up with stuff that you can have a conversation and then it can actually appear to comprehend complex issues, that's
pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, if I was starting off in the space, I'd definitely, you know, have my career in large language models because I think that the potential is massive. And this is just the start of this, really. So this model came out, I don't know, end of last year. And, you know, there were previous iterations. But it's quite clear, you know, there's a few things to work on, but it's a really clear path of what has to happen next to make this better.
I
was reading about it this morning, and so I think GPT Chat, you know, it looks 4,000 words back. But GPT, the version 4 of the model, looks 32,000 words back. So that's 8 times more powerful in a sense. It's not more powerful, but it's looking at a whole lot more context and a whole lot more. So it will give you that much of a better answer.
So the transformational ideas have happened, and now there's lots of room for refining things.
There's fine tuning. I think one
a lot. I mean, fine tuning sounds minor, but we're not talking about minor stuff.
Yeah,
we're talking about it. Yeah,
talking about fairly major stuff. I shouldn't use the word fine tuning. It's
kind of like when we had the steam engine, and now we have tiny little motors that you can fit inside your watch, or you know, something like that. Like that's the potential evolution, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I think I should probably point out though, these things inherently they do not understand what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And there are some fundamental differences between how we think and how they think. So humans are essentially analog.
Yeah.
And computers are digital, so everything is ones and zeros. So when you're trying to kind of mimic what a human does, you can't do that really because we have essentially an analog brain which works in quite a different way.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It's emphasizing that it's different.
Yeah, we're different, that's right.
But the AI has been trained to act like a human, so your tendency is to want to respond to it like you're a human. Like the way I was wording my questions, like I was kept using the word feeling and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just felt drawn to writing like that, even though I knew what I was dealing with was numbers, you know, ones and zeros.
It kind of
draws you in like that.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So the way I can see this working is these kind of companies will essentially ration their technology, a little bit like electricity or broadband internet. And so you'll be like, you know, for whatever task you're doing, you'll be able to essentially fine-tune the model on your data using their system.
Yeah.
And then you'll pay for use of that model. So looking into the future...
You'll rent it.
You're renting, exactly. Yeah. You're renting their space. You're renting their thing. So you need the underlying model that they've got, but then you'll get your own data and you'll fine-tune it. And there's a couple of ways you can do that using their tools. But then over time... You know, you think of the kind of consequences of this. Well, you're really tied into Microsoft in this case because Microsoft essentially run the infrastructure that ChatGPT is using.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can have an AI on your own PC that's going to do the same job because this stuff is huge, right? You have no capacity to train this up yourself.
Right.
This is massive. So I work for an AI company and we've got some, we do a lot of stuff in the cloud. But the cost of training this up is prohibitive, even using the cloud.
So you're processing in the cloud?
Yes, so we do both. We do local and we do it in the cloud. in the cloud, you can pay, you know, between $1 and $5 an hour for a server. And then if you have, you know, a bunch of servers, you can crank up thousands of dollars worth of costs, tens of thousands of dollars really quickly. So for the average small company or person, we have no capacity to do this.
So how many you've got? Scale. You sounds like you've got like the latest computers with the best GPUs, and if you were do if you weren't using the cloud, have you got enough at Linker Analytics to do full AI, or do you need the cloud as well?
So we could buy a whole lot of processors and do that ourselves.
Like how many? Let's give us.
Well, okay. So when I was doing some, I do a lot of my work is in the States.
Yeah.
And for inference, I had to essentially do a massive computer vision model over about six states in US. In order to make that work, I had to crank out 50 instances of Amazon servers.
Yeah.
So at one time, so you have essentially 50 instances going away and doing your thing and then coming back with a result. So to do that locally, that involves some IT guy setting up, 50 servers. You've got to pay for those, make that all happen, pay for the electricity, so on and so forth. It's just not really possible.
Right. So, okay. So let's talk about what you do, because you just talked about computer vision there. So it's a graphical interpretation sort of thing going on.
So computer vision and large language models are not massively different.
Yeah.
So what you do is you train up some model using unsupervised learning. So unsupervised learning is when it essentially trains itself. So you give it a bunch of information and it trains itself. It learns kind of the patterns in the information.
Yeah.
But you're not telling it what pattern you want it to learn. You just, hey, learn some patterns for me, please.
Yeah.
Once that's happened, you then do what's called fine-tuning. And you're like, actually, so in our case, we do satellite imagery mostly, or some aerial imagery. And we do other things, but satellite imagery is our bread and butter. I want you to pick out all the wetlands in USA, and here's what a wetland looks like. And you tell it what a wetland looks like. And then you run that through the fine-tuning and, you teach your AI what a wetland looks like. And you're, okay, cool, you've learned what a wetland looks like. Now I'm going to give you the information for the whole of the US, and I want you to find all the wetlands in the USA.
Right. So that's where, so to start with, it needs human help, but when it comes to that massive processing part of the job, it far exceeds what people can do.
Yeah, exactly, because it'll just keep on going all day, every day. It's really good at looking for patterns. So humans are good at looking for patterns, but then we tend to kind of drift off task pretty quickly.
yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so there's subtle differences we can't see. So, we're very much tied into our biology, whereas in AI you can be like, well, actually, I want you to look for patterns using the infrared band. And we're very much, we can't handle certain... We can handle a certain swath of information, but what an AI can handle is far exceeds what we can handle.
Yeah.
We have our strengths. So you tell it to look for a pattern, and then the pattern changes, and the AI is like, no, I'm looking for this pattern.
Yeah.
So we're quite good at... We're a bit more adaptable.
Yeah, we can say that pattern's different, but there's obvious commonalities. Like that's kind of how our brains work, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas the AI needs help with that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm doing a lot of stuff in the desert in the States. And, in the States, so part of the mountainous areas, it's nice and green. And, this is essentially what something looks like. And you get into the desert, it looks quite different. But as a human, you're like, well, it's a desert. I know that the wetlands, the landscape's going to look different down here. And I can adapt that without being told explicitly that this looks different.
Yeah. So I think that information processing is... The ability to handle information, I think for me personally, I feel like that's going to be the most helpful thing in my life. Like, I already feel overwhelmed by the amount of information I have to process.
Yeah.
I have 60 accounts with various things related to this job. But I think that's normal. I think if you went and checked how many accounts you've got for various things, like, there's the bank account, there's the telecom account, there's, just all these things. I can't even remember what they are.
Yep.
But I was trying to, at each one, you need to understand once you log in, you need to understand the system inside it a little bit to be able to find the information you're looking for. The information becomes increasingly complex within each account. And I was trying to find something with Spark the other day, and it took me a couple of hours to get to the bottom of a problem that I had. And I was actually helped by ChatGPT. I asked it a question, and it enabled me to narrow down where I was looking.
Is that right? So you're using the system in anger already?
In anger, yeah. Yeah, I was like, I was fed up with Spark. And I was like, I was asking, because it's got a chat bot that's like pretty thick, basically, by comparison, and not very helpful. And there were no people. It was late at night, so there were no people I could talk to. And yeah, because it could look over the whole website immediately, and you know, almost instantaneously, and find the thing that I was looking for.
Yeah.
Whereas I can't do that; I have to manually go through page by page.
So this is your phone bill you're looking at, your internet bill.
Yeah, it was to do with my broadband usage on my data usage on my phone.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and trying to find
your kids
out.
Borrowed your phone for the day and.
Well, I'd borrowed my phone for the day. I think that was the problem. But yeah, it was just. I mean, I feel kind of stupid saying I couldn't work it out, but I was really struggling.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one example of one of my 60 accounts where I just get slowed down because I want to find out some information. 30 years ago, I would just rung Telecom and said, I've got a problem, and the human being there would have solved it for me.
Yeah.
Bang.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to put all the work onto us.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like the whole world's like that. And I think and the internet's just torrents of information, just awash with information, and we need help accessing it, you know.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's having conversations like this, you kind of come up with these angles that I don't think have necessarily been put out there, because it's not that people haven't thought of them, it's just that there's just so many different angles to the same change.
Yeah, yeah, and everyone, I've watched quite a few videos on YouTube, and everyone's talking about different things where it's their area of expertise, and they can see how AI is going to affect that. But very different people, very different areas of knowledge, yeah.
Well, you can see what's going to happen, like straight away. You know, a company like Spark, which is obviously their technology company as well as a phone company, and they have in-house AI people, and it'd be almost a no-brainer for them to hook up something like ChatGPT to the phone. So you hey, Spark, my bill's not correct, and I can't find this, and there'll be a voice at the other end saying, hey, this is what you need to do, and it'll be a computer.
Yeah, I think I suggested that they asked for a review at the end, and I think I said you guys need to get some AI in there real fast.
Yeah, no, they've got some. They've got a team of AI people, and you know they do good stuff.
Yeah, and there is another thing too about the human way we treat it. We're going over time, but I'm just going to keep talking. Like when we had, like you know, State Highway 23 is closed at the moment.
Yeah,
and we had other closures and all the stuff going on, and people get on Facebook, and instead of checking the posts on the notice board, because Facebook's not that good for searching for information, people just go, oh, is the harbour swimmable yet? Is State Highway 23 open yet? Has anyone given a date? They just ask the question. They don't bother looking for info. And you see four or five. If you go through the regular notice board, you see four or five people doing that at any one go.
Oh, you do, don't you? Yeah,
yeah. And it's like, that's actually the way we work. Like people say, oh, why are you being so silly? Why didn't you just check below? But actually, that's how we work. We just like to ask a question.
Yeah,
it's a very human
and it's not
thing.
Like there's two things: we're asking for the information, but we're also asking for a bit of connection as well.
But that's a bit worrying, isn't it? That the AI is going to give us that sense of connection.
Is that
a worry?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Like there's that whole thing. I read in South Korea yesterday they've got the lowest birth rate, like in any country any time in the world, which is 0.7 per woman or something.
Really,
0.7. Yeah. So on average, so that means. The replacement rate is 2.1, they say.
Yes.
And they're down to, I think it's 0.78, so it's slightly above 0.7.
Basically a third, though.
A third. But you think, oh, all those lonely people who get their connection through an AI,
yeah.
You know, they're not going to be having kids, that's for sure.
Is the connection going to feel real enough to actually be a substitute? Because I find, like, I don't get gripped by social media the way some other people do. Like after 5 minutes on Facebook, I feel like my soul's been sucked out of my body and I want some real human connection, you know? Yeah. So the question, yeah.
I don't do Facebook either, so I think we're probably the wrong people to answer this question.
I have to do it for my job, but otherwise, yeah, it frustrates me too much. And
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I find it hard to see that people would really want to connect with an AI, but actually look at Facebook. I think they probably do.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not it's people have always been crying out for connection, but it's kind of made the problem worse.
Yeah,
because now if the people we would have connected with are also on Facebook or social media.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. That's right, and you know, and they expect the, you know, hey, you don't need to ask me that. You can read my Facebook spiel.
Yeah. So for just one last question before we go, as someone who was on the inside of AI for a while, I guess you've had this feeling that it's going to be a big deal. And you're kind of like, oh, everyone's just noticed now? Is that kind of how it feels?
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely been creeping up. Like, so it's been a buzzword for, I don't know, the last 10 years. So if you work in kind of any kind of government corporate circles and you've got a project and you really want the project to happen, you say, hey, I'm doing an AI transformation to my document management system.
Yeah.
some high-up manager will see the word AI and fund your project to the tune of crap loads of money.
Yep.
Whether you're actually using AI or not doesn't matter. You know, you can call anything an AI.
Yeah.
So that's been on the cards for quite a while. And corporate people kind of like these buzzwords because it looks like they're moving forward and they're doing stuff fast.
Right.
So I suppose it's the average person on the street who I kind of assumed started to understand that this is a big thing.
Yeah.
However, as I said, I had some whiskeys last night with a bunch of friends and half the people didn't. So it's possibly not as big a thing as well.
I think we're at that point, though, where that's changing.
Yeah.
I feel like it's really... The fact that I wanted to do an interview about it is a sign, like I've been sitting here talking to people for 10 years and Mike's been interviewing you and I've never really, you know, but as soon as I could see ChatGPT in action, I was like, oh, okay, this is significant. And people are talking about, one commentator I listened to was talking about, you know, when the internet started and everyone was like, oh yeah, internet, you know, it's cool, but it wasn't really changing things. And then Napster was, for this person, Napster was their first thing that showed them how disruptive it could be. And that was at the start. They call it a sigmoid curve, which I didn't really know what one was, but it's at the kind of near the turning point where it ushers in a period of rapid change.
Yeah.
And then that change levels off. And being in the media, I know exactly, you know, we've gone through a huge period of change, and they're suggesting that AI is going to do that as well, and we're just at the bottom of that now.
So just, this is interesting. So about 50 years ago, so AI has been a thing for a long time, right? Although what you call AI has changed. About 50 years ago in the 60s, the AI community got together and they kind of wrote a roadmap of how AI would become the next big thing and how long this would take. And they said it's going to take, you know, in this roadmap about a year because this technology is just so easy and so out
there. When was this?
This is in like early 60s.
And they said it was going to take a year.
That's what they thought at the time.
Okay.
So with AI, what seems to happen is people get really, really excited and then you get what you call a zone of disillusionment. So like the self-driving cars, everyone thought they were the next big thing. And then, oh no, they're not actually working that well. They tend to hit little kids. And it's not saying they're not going to be the next big thing. It's just that you kind of have these cycles and people get excited and then it kind of drops back down and then people get excited again. So we're kind of in about the third cycle here for AI.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it's not going to be a really big thing, but people will get disillusioned when they're like, oh, it wrote my documentation, but it's misspelled my name or, you know,
yeah, it's done this really, this sentence here that's completely wrong.
Yeah. Oh, it's actually easier to just do it myself.
Yeah.
And so you'll get that as well. And so it'll probably like, there'll be, I don't know, at some point this will peak and then people will get disillusioned. But the technology is gradually moving ahead and then, you know, insidiously over time it'll just be there.
I think the thing that's probably different now is that there's people who are not AI experts at all who are able to use it and doing all sorts of diverse things with it. And we've just seen the start of that, I think, how people will find ways to use it that the AI developers never even imagined.
Yeah, I think I'm mightily impressed that you're using it to sort out your phone bills. And actually,
I was feeling desperate. I was so frustrated. I was like, oh, I'm going to ask ChatGPT, see what it says.
And actually, when I talked to you the other day, you told a pretty good story about how you used, or you and your family used AI end of last year. I don't know. Did you?
Oh, am I talking about that one? Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm talking about that one.
I think okay.
Yeah, yeah. We might wait till we might talk about that in about a year's time. I feel.
Oh, okay.
That particular one. Yeah.
Let the dust settle.
That's going to leave people really intrigued. But I'm not talking about that just now. Yeah, awesome. Hey, folks, we'll be talking to Dan Bull and a completely fascinating AI discussion. There's lots more to talk about. Maybe we'll get you back again sometime in the future.
Yeah.
No doubt you've got to get off and continue with the computer vision work that you do. But thanks for coming in this morning. It's been awesome.
And, yeah, no worries. Yeah,
enjoyed it.
Good chats. Cheers.
All right, folks, we've gone way over time. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again in the morning.